All right, wonderful. Hello, everybody. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. I'm continuing our series of interviews with various Course in Miracles teachers and authors. And today, as you've already heard, we have Tomás Vieira. And I have had the pleasure of meeting Nook, his partner, but I haven't met him yet, so I'm really looking forward to our talk today and getting to know him better along with you. They are both Australians, Tomás and Nook, and they are the authors of the bestseller Take Me to Truth, Undoing the Ego. Initiated by A Course in Miracles, their 17-year spiritual awakening journey led to the almost total deconstruction of their lives and belief systems before emerging from the process together. Their uniquely dynamic family experience of learning the Course as a couple and then with their daughter is quite unprecedented. No amount of theory or substitute can hold a candle to experience. Amidst a lightness and laughter, these authors share a profound dedication to learning and living the Course without one iota of compromise to its principles. So I'd like to ask you, Tomás, and thank you for joining us here today. Thank you very much. And I'd like to start with, I just gave a very brief description from your bio of your background, and I'd like to ask you more about it. How is it that you came to the teachings of Course in Miracles? What is your story behind that? And right now, so please share with us anything you'd like to say about your background and about the story about how you actually were drawn to the teachings of A Course in Miracles. And I pass the mic over to you. Thank you.
Hi, Linda. How are you? Thanks for making this opportunity possible. And g'day to everybody out there from Australia. So great question. How did we arrive at A Course in Miracles? I think it's a case of route one, as probably the case with most people, which is when you've had enough pain and suffering, I reckon. That was our route, at any rate. I mean, we had looked at other stuff. You know, we had, Nook and I met in 84, okay, and we got married 2 years later, and within a year after that, our daughter Ricky was born, and many of the folks know that Ricky's on the cover of Take Me to Truth, and 2 years after that, so in 1990, 6 years after our relationship, after we met actually, was actually when our relationship truly began, because those first 6 years were really dysfunctional years. Despite all the love that we had for each other, we were mauling each other to death, so to speak. And it was then that Nook found A Course in Miracles and felt that it was real. I too felt it was real. In fact, I felt it was so real that I ran away up to the jungles of Papua New Guinea for 3 months and ran around up there hoping I'd develop amnesia or get a lobotomy or something. But that didn't happen, and when I came back, I said to Nook, are you still reading that damn book? And she said, yep, you've got to have a look at this, because this is what we've talked about, and it's real. And I thought, oh, shit, here we go. And that's when my journey began with the Course, with Nook. And almost as soon as we began reading A Course in Miracles, the undoing process began. And alongside the undoing process, of course, is the development of trust takes place, right? Oh, well, you have the choice to develop trust. We chose to develop that trust. We chose to believe. And it led us to this place here. Of course, in the intervening period, we've managed to, because we were married, I think I might have said, in the intervening period, we managed to get divorced. We managed to get divorced to save the relationship. You see, we have a... Do you know why I'm talking a bit funny? It's because I've got Nook sitting next to me. And at the workshop, she likes to say, don't worry about me, I'm a recovering control freak. And you can see she is still recovering. And we send her our prayers for that quick recovery. So she bamboozles me, then I don't know where the bloody all I am. But you can see, we love each other to death. Hi, Nook, everybody says. And we do, we love each other to death, and beyond, in fact, beyond that death, because we did actually have to experience a death, which was the death of the form of the relationship in order to save the content of the relationship, being the love. And years later, we said, hey, you know, all those mistakes we made, because we made so many damn mistakes in terms of digesting the course and at times confusing levels and taking things literally. So we made all of those mistakes, and it's because, I guess, of all those mistakes that we made that we thought, hey, maybe if we write Take Me to Truth, it might be helpful to one or two people who can really appreciate it, and who are genuinely, you know, on the path of waking up, not wanting to be right, but waking up, who are genuinely want material that's practical. And we try to do that with our material and in our workshops and teleclasses as much as possible, really bring it back down to earth and you know, ask the questions and answer the questions around forgiveness, around guilt, around suffering, around pain, and around love. So, sorry, that was a long answer to a short question, Lynn. Thank you for the question.
Hi, can you hear me? I'm back. Thank you so much, Tomas, for that sharing. That is really a wonderful story. It's an incredible story, really, for two people to go through their marriage and to actually become divorced to save the love of the relationship. I just love that, and it's very inspiring to me, and I'm sure to many, many other people, and all the people you're meeting around the world. So I'd like to ask you, how does a couple go from, yes, Duff, one again, to become one again? That's such a great saying. How does a couple go from divorce to writing a book together and then touring around the world to speak about it? And so I'm just wondering, there's got to be a really great story behind that of how it was that you decided to write the book together and then go on tour together to give workshops. If you maybe share that story with us, how that all got started, and I'll pass the mic back to you, Tomas. Thank you.
Thanks for the question, Linda. Well, the truth of the matter is that it was not a conventional separation or divorce. By that, what I mean is that we held hands through that whole time. We communicated that whole time. You see, in the course of the undoing, it's Holy Spirit always works things out perfectly, right? So what happened is that around that time, where we had developed a whole lot of trust, okay, already. But what happened was that it was specifically within myself that there was still a large degree of insecurity. And that insecurity, I could see, was manifesting in behavior that was around, you know, being controlling, using guilt, being manipulative. And I was sick of myself, frankly. But what to do? You see, what happened was that I could see that, we both could see that there was this piece of paper, this marriage certificate, conferred by an external source that's supposed to, at some level, also confer some kind of internal safety. Well, it didn't, of course, and we all know in the course that it can't, right? Nothing in form can give you that. So we said, well, you know, we've come so far. By this stage, we'd done 10 years of the course study. And we said, we've come this far. And Jesus says in the course, love is freedom. So we said, what are we scared of? Well, the truth is that we were scared that, like two caged birds, if we opened the door, of us would fly our separate ways. And what we said was, well, how are we ever going to find out if love is real or not, unless we let every illusion that's holding, supposedly holding love in place, go? Because these illusions that were holding love in place were actually the prison that was causing the pain and suffering in truth. So we could see that part. We just didn't know whether love was real. So what we did was to let go of each other. And as I said before, Holy Spirit works things perfectly, because that time coincided with a number of visions that Nook had that were telling her she needed to come to America. She needed to love, to leave and come to America. So over a number of years, she was making frequent trips to America. Some were for 3 months, others were for 6 months at a time, and so on. And during this time, what happened is that we, between us, we said, you know, true love is actually wanting to support the other person in whatever they want to do. It's actually seeing that, as Jesus says in the Course, that my brother's needs are my needs, and that in helping my brother meet their needs, I actually get the gift and discover who I am as well. And so I supported Nook in following her vision, and I found that it strengthened me. I found that it instead of creating greater insecurity, it created greater inner peace, which helped to develop more and more trust. And we got to the point where Nook really did feel that, you know, she needed somehow to be in America. And I said, well, you know, we need to be free to be able to do this. We need to be free to be able to do this. So we decided to get divorced. You see, so that the whole divorce thing was done with love, out of love. Okay? And in doing that, then Nook stayed for a while. And what happened is that she then eventually met somebody else, a guy called Nick, who is her husband, and people that have been to our workshop know that we refer to him as Saint Nick, and that's a whole other story. But so she lived with and has continued to live in America since. And about 4 years after, or 5 years after being married to Nick, that's when we said, hey, you know what, let's write a book about this, because we've done this full circle now. By this stage, I had met Nick. He is a brother to me. He remains a brother to me. We are one family, even though I'm not, married. For the 6 months or so or more this last couple of years that I've been in the States, I live here in New Mexico with Nook and her husband, Saint Nick. And you can see why I refer to him as Saint Nick, because I don't know how many men would be comfortable with letting their wife go off pretty much every weekend doing workshops with her ex-husband. And to top it off, because we want to save money, we often ask our hosts, we say, look, you know, we don't need anything fancy. If we just have, we're happy to share one room. Just make sure it's two beds and we're happy, you know, because I snore and Nook's deaf, so we're a perfect match for each other anyway. and so I guess that's how we could come to write a book, because if you actually look at it, all that happened is that we got rid of the form. And that form is just like the veil that Jesus talks about. It's that illusion. It's difficult for people to understand, because they think of divorce and form as separation in content. They can't see beyond that to see that it's just a veil, it's just a word, it's just an act in this world, that's all. But nothing real is going on. So, in other words, no real separation has ever taken place between Nook and I. So I'll hand that mic back over to you. Can I just pick up the mic for a sec, Linda? I just comment or a comment here. So you guys got rid of the form, yes, but she remarried, so she picked up more form. Yes, you're right in that sense, except if Nook was speaking right now, and those that have attended our workshops will know that, she didn't pick it up for the reasons that we all do, which is usually to have our ego appeased. She met a man who she knew would be a great teacher, who would help her undo even more of her ego. So that's why she decided to hook up with him, because she saw, and they do have an amazingly wonderful marriage and a very much a holy relationship, because it's not based on the normal concepts that we have around marriage, such as meeting our ego desires. You know, it's you and me, babe, and you know, if I marry you, then you owe me and I owe you, which is our usual special relationship, right? No matter how much we couch it in the words of love, most of our relationships, or as Jesus says, all of our relationships are special, and they're about matching up our ego strengths, our ego desires, our ego personalities. And of course, that's when the shit hits the fan, right? Because those ego personality traits, etc., are, like this world, ever-changing. So as they change, the other person misunderstands those changes of personality as changes in love, as changes in content. And so then, what do? We separate and we've got to start all over again. Hey, believe me, by the way, I know about that because I've done that 3 times now. So everybody laugh. But that's how I can speak with such authority about it. Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much for that sharing. Can everyone hear me now? Can everyone hear me out there? Great. Okay, and I just want to let you know that we will allow some time at the end for some questions, so please hold your questions until then, and then you can ask Thomas whatever questions you like, and you guys can pass the mic back and forth between him. And I just wanted to say that, you know, Thomas, I've never been married, and that was something that I grew up thinking I needed to do, was to get married and have children. And I very much wanted it, and I thought that that's what would make me happy in this world. And however, the partners that I pulled into my life were pretty messed up, like I was in the past, because I was abusing substances and felt very lost and alone in my life because of a traumatic childhood that I had. And really, it's just everybody's story. It's a story of being lost and found. And so as I rested in the awareness of the truth of what I am, I became what I was seeking in the world. And so still I can see that relationship is a beautiful way to live your life, because, you know, like a good friend of mine says, her husband is her stairway to heaven. And it does afford you a wonderful opportunity to know yourself and to rest in awareness, to give you the opportunity of that. And so, you know, when you're talking about you and Nook, what I think of is how, you know, the whole notion of a soulmate and that there's one perfect person for us. You know, I never really bought into that. And in the light of awareness, I can see that because we're all one, we're really soulmates with everyone we meet in some form or another. And that resting in awareness and connecting with Source and practicing all the principles of the Course in Miracles and the truth is not about giving up the experiences that we're of being here in this world. It's about giving up our attachment to relying on it for our well-being and to find our well-being through resting and awareness. Anyhow, I just really love your story and love hearing what you have to say about that, which brings me to the next question. Awareness or God or our connection to Source, whatever you want to call it, it really is undescribable, I realize. It has no beginning, it has no end, it has no birth, it has no death. It's totally open and spacious. But what I'd like to ask you even though understanding it is undescribable. And I know that you and Nook have had these experiences of connecting with Source. For the benefit of us, will you please describe to us what that feels like, what it feels like to rest in awareness, what it feels like to connect with Source, just as a way of sharing with people out in the world with us. And I pass the microphone back to you, Thomas. Thank you.
Thanks, Linda. Great question. To answer that, I guess there's no... It's about trust and peace, I guess, is the feeling for it. And for me, oftentimes, what it's like is that I get all goosebumpy. I might have tears, and I know at that moment that it's grace washing over me, preparing me to enter into a space where I can stand in front of my sweet Lord, as I said in my post the other day, in front of my sweet Lord, and allow His mercy and His blessings to wash all over me, naked, without one pretense, without wanting to bring into that space one illusion, without wanting to bring into that space one attachment. You know, because that's where the peace really is. We know that when we're struggling for peace, it's like wanting to enter a room with a very narrow doorway, right? And you got a piece of furniture that won't fit. So you can try all you like to enter the doorway. You can even enter the doorway. But so long as you're holding on to that piece of furniture, you cannot completely enter that doorway. And so what happens is that we usually end up leaving the presence and the peace of God and sitting with our furniture, that peace, because we're scared of losing it. Because we're scared if we leave it at the doorway and we walk into the grace, the mercy, and the peace of God, that somehow God's going to take it away from us. And that somehow when we leave that room of peace, we'll walk out and our attachment will be gone. And this is what we learned in the development of trust in our relationship, in the stories with our daughter, in our life with setting forward with this book and going forward to do all the talking that we do around the world and giving up our attachment to finances and trusting that, you know, Holy Spirit is the eternal banker for us. All of this is about leaving all of that stuff outside the door and daring to enter into it. And then recognizing when you're in that room that all you feel is peace, and that more than that, that you don't want anything else more than this. And that's it. And that's how we live our days now. If we're agitated, we keep handing over to Holy Spirit, handing over to Holy Spirit, because all we want is to get into that room, into that space where we're naked in front of our sweet Lord, where there isn't anything that we would bring into that room, and we go, ah, peace, I'm home. Here, I'm safe. And the recognition that only here is safety lies. This is the only place. Not out there and not with our attachments. And what does Jesus say? You know, a big thing for Nook and I that gave us great trust in terms of allowing Holy Spirit to transform our special relationship to a holy relationship was where He said, look, I'm not going to take anything away from you. But if you just hand it to me, I'll just clean it all nice, make it all nice and new, shine it up, and I'll restore it back to you. Minus all of the dysfunction that you had before with it. Minus all the specialness that you had. So that's what we're learning. And so that's the experience, I guess, that we have of God in our life. And the only experience that we live for anymore. I'll hand the mic back to you.
Brenda?
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now out there? Okay, wonderful. I was just saying to Thomas, thank you so much for that description of awareness. It's quite beautiful. And it's so beautiful that I can feel connection with Source when you describe it. And I'm betting others out there can feel that too. And I really liked what you said about Jesus cleaning everything up. I wonder, does that work for age spots and wrinkles and, you know, an extra 10, 15 pounds? I wonder if that works for that. And I'm sure it does because, you know, really, there's one problem and but one solution, right? So let me ask you something. How do we, that you described awareness to us, you described connection to our source very beautifully. So how do we connect with Source? How do you do that? How do you connect with Source? And how often do you do it? And I'll pass the mic back to you. Thank you.
Hi, thanks for that question. How we connect to Source, for Nook and I, how we connect to Source is in every second, in every minute, right? What it's about is making no decision apart from God. So that means that we train ourselves to be aware enough that before we utter a word, that already inside, it's what is the intent. And if the intent is ego-based intent, then we know from experience that all that does is make us feel separate, alone, isolated, unloving. So what we do is just have the intent to choose love every time. But in terms of how we get, and so that's also how we get in touch with God, because it's about keeping Him present. And there's a lovely lesson there about, you know, my mind only holds thoughts of God. And we really try to live that and be aware of that. And in the first instance, when we go there and wonder to ourselves, well, if my mind only holds thoughts of God, what's all this other stuff and how much of it is there? Initially, we find that it's 99.9% of what's going on ain't got nothing to do with God, right? It's all our stuff about, oh, did I wash my hair? Did I pay my bills? Did I do this? Do I do that? You know, what about the future? As you said, the past. What about the past? What about my stories? And so on, right? So it is that commitment, as you said, there about really desiring God more than anything. And in terms of how, it's now it becomes automatic. You know, it becomes automatic because whatever we need to learn is in front of us. We don't need to go looking for it. So all we got to do is wake up. And it's like Holy Spirit presents a menu for us for the day. Right? The funny thing is the ego also is there. You can picture it shoving the Holy Spirit out of the way and saying, no, I have a better menu for you today. I prefer that we look at anxiety, worry, hardship, depression, sickness, death, and who we can attack today. And that's its idea, right? But it's up to us to have that discipline to just, you know, follow God. And, you know, somebody asked the other day, yeah, but I've surrendered everything. Somebody said, I've surrendered everything to God and I'm still in great fear. Dong dong, sorry, you ain't surrendered nothing yet. You know? Because it's impossible to have truly surrendered and experience fear. They can't live in the same room. And with that, I'll pass it back. I could go on and on and on. Thank you.
Can you hear me now? I had to click on and off a couple of times. Sometimes. Okay, wonderful. Tomas, that was good, you know, but I just realized while I was listening to you that I have to go because I have to go wash my hair. Just kidding, but thanks for that. And so I'm listening to you talk about connecting with awareness, and it sounds like you're saying that really, is this an automatic thing for you? Has it become automatic for you? And that, you know, how does connection with Source become automatic? And so I'll pass the mic back to you about our connection with Source becoming automatic, and how do we make that connection automatic. Pass back to you, Tomas.
Thanks, Linda. Yes, for Nook and I, right, it is pretty much automatic now. There are a few instances still where we are reactionary, and you know, this is might be helpful to everybody out there. When we're, oh, is that a better volume now? Can you hear me? Better, louder, is that better? You know, it's an automatic reaction now for the most part. And the only time that it isn't automatic for us are those times that we're reacting. So I guess that might be something that people want to bear in mind. The times when they react first, those are the times to take note of and say, right, you know, if I can't do this right now because I'm in the middle of whatever, I'm going to make a note of this because then I want to be able to hand this over to Holy Spirit, right? Of course, we want to hand it over straight away, but we might want to actually do more work on it in terms of taking time out to actually look at what is the story behind it and then hand that over to Holy Spirit completely. And the other thing is discipline, right? It really is the discipline. But I think that the discipline, you see, we can try all we like, but if we're trying, we're not really doing it, right? It's forced. I think that what actually happens is that we've had enough pain, see? And it's about that decision first, you see? If you don't decide that you've had enough pain, if you don't make a conscious choice that you want God above everything else, you can try till the cows come home. And what will happen is that the ego will be doing the trying. You see, because it loves to do the trying so that then it can then kick your ass and make you feel guilty by turning around and saying, look how hard you tried and you haven't done shit. Nothing's changed, blah, 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 so you are hopeless, you know what, right? And so this business of discipline and trying really has to be preceded by that heartfelt desire to know and love God and to be and... dare I say this, and I do, claim your position as the only Son of God. You know, we have to decide that we are the light of the world. And that when Jesus said that he came here to teach us all that we could do and more, that was literal. If we don't want to do that, then we can try till the cows come home. So I guess another way of saying that for Nook and I is that we want to be the light of the world. And this isn't some prideful ego thing. It's about being the light of the world means that we're actually being students, not teachers. So this is another misperception. See, when we proclaim that, it's not from grandiosity. It's from that humble sense of grandeur, which means, how can I be helpful? Whose feet can I wash? And it's through that we learn who we are. And it's through that we help mirror back to the people who they are in truth. Right? It's from that place of service. So I'll hand it back to you, Linda.
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? Is it better? Okay, great. Tomas, thank you for that sharing. We appreciate that. You know, I'd like to express that, you know, when you talk about being students and being humble, what it reminds me of is my own experience of resting in awareness, where I see that whatever I have to say or whatever I have to share is really not the teaching. It's just an introduction to the real teaching, which is each person's experience, direct experience of connecting with Source, and them living their lives from that pure space of connection with Source, to be guided and directed from that pure space to live their lives in an optimum way for as long as we appear to be here in these bodies, to not be, as they say, to be able to live in an optimum way through stabilizing our well-being through connection with Source. And that really, it is our true nature to live a wholly beneficial life. And we don't really have to worry about how we're going to do that or what that actually is going to be, because it just comes to us so effortlessly and easily, as it did for the two of you and in your own life, and how your life has brought you to where you're currently at. And we thank you for that so much. And so I'd like to ask you, this is a good point for us to come to, what is the difference between intellectual understanding of the truth and the actual experience of the truth? If you would please discuss this with us. Thank you. Mike, back to you, Tomas.
That's a great question. There's so many answers to that, I guess, you know, the difference. Sometimes I think intellectually, when we want to know, you know, the truth and sprout the truth intellectually, sometimes I get a feeling that it's about wanting to be right. And the direct experience, I think, of truth is that what happens is that the recipient of that doesn't feel less than, doesn't feel that you're more than, but there's a joining. The true teacher-student relationship is entered into when it's experiential and real, because there's no desire to be right. There's only the desire to join. And where there's that desire to join, and you have both parties wanting to do that, what happens is that you create that opportunity for a holy instant to occur, and the Holy Spirit's present, and really he's doing all the talking, and both are doing the learning, even though two sets of mouths seem to be moving. And I think the other side is that, you know, we can, like I say, you can talk till the cows come home. All you're doing is gathering information. It's like riding a bicycle. See, I can talk to you about riding a bicycle till the cows come home, but until you actually get on there and ride it, you won't know it. And nothing I can do in all my talking can eliminate the fear and the concerns that you have, right? You have to do it, and that's the direct experience. The other thing is, oftentimes when we talk about truth, we're talking about what to learn. The Course in Miracles is actually all about unlearning, and it's about leaving the space, a vacuum, so that Holy Spirit can enter, reinterpret everything, and tell you what to listen to, what to say, how to think, and so on, right? But when we're doing the talking, and especially if we launch into something without first stopping to ask Holy Spirit to do it, well, then you can be darn sure who's the talking head, and it'll be the ego. I'll hand it back to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Thomas. And okay, so what if you could say that humanity has one problem? All of humanity has one problem. How would you state that?
How would we state that? That's a great one. We've forgotten that we're the Son of God. That's our only problem. That's it in a nutshell. Because if we knew we were the Son of God, a whole set of perceptions would follow. One would be that you knew all your needs were met. So if you knew all your needs were met, would you have to be running around there like a chicken with its head cut off? No. Or as we say in Australia, chooks. You'd be running around like chooks with your heads cut off. No, we wouldn't be. Would we be like rabbits living in total fear? No, we wouldn't. Would we need to get anything? No, we wouldn't. Would we need to experience sickness and then actually see value in sickness as a learning agent? No, we wouldn't. So what would we be? We'd be love, joy, we'd be peace, we'd be abundance, we'd be happiness, we'd be co-creators, right? And all this is actually here now. Because I think still that there are still many people that still have some unconscious belief that, oh, it's all a dream. So if it's all a dream, then I don't really get it, because Jesus talks about the happy dream, which is about actually waking up here in the dream. If we say this is all a dream, then what we're really saying behind it, or what we could be saying behind it, is awakening happens after I die. Well, guess what? That doesn't happen. We just come around, play the silly game all over again. So who the hell wants to do that, right? It's about waking up here and now in the dream, and that's what Jesus did. So I don't know if that quite answered the question, but I felt I needed to say that anyway. Thank you.
That was beautiful, Thomas. That's quite eloquent and insightful. Thank you so much. So we see there's one problem. There's only one problem and one solution. And so I'd like to ask you, because the solution is then to connect with Source. So I'd like to ask you, do you have a particularly powerful experience of connection with Source and that you would care to share with us? And I know that all connections with Source are powerful, but sometimes there are some rather extraordinary, powerful experiences, direct experiences that we have of connection to Source. And I was wondering if you had something like that that you'd be willing to share with us. Thank you. I'm passing the mic back to you, Thomas.
Thanks, Linda. Great question. Some of our listeners today will already know this one. I mean, we've had several, and I've had quite a few lately. But one that springs to mind, and especially in the context of us talking about Nook and I and the book and so on, was early in our relationship when we were courting, actually, on the beaches, the tropical beaches of Cairns one evening, lying on that beautiful tropical sand. You can picture the palm trees, right? And proclaiming the love that we had for each other. And we were talking very much within the spiritual context of having found our soulmates, we thought, at the time, and that's how we talked about it and referred to it. But there was this deep sense of real love, and we knew that both of us had already experienced a life where love could seemingly turn to hate, and we didn't want this for ourselves, not in this new budding relationship. So at that point, we made what turned out to be our sacred vow, which was that we said to each other, you know, no matter what or no matter whom might seem to come between us, let us never, never abandon each other. And at that point, a really cool thing happened, which was that I was on one elbow looking down at Nook, who was lying on the sand. She was looking up at me. But this most beautiful, gentle pink light lit up Nook's face, just her face, unbeknownst to me. That same light lit up my face, apparently. I didn't feel anything, but I could see the light on Nook's face, and the same for her. And we were both gobsmacked, as we say in Australia, by it, left speechless for a while, and just went like, wow, what was that? And I guess that wow factor is only coming out now in the life that we're leading now, where all we want to do is to be truly helpful. All what we want to do is, through the joining of our relationship and allowing Holy Spirit to transform what was such a very special and dysfunctional relationship into this wonderful relationship, is to, of course, as Jesus says, to extend it. And that's all we want to do. There's nothing special in it. It's about being able to extend it. And that's the base where all this, the love comes from. And it's not our love. It's the love coming through us that just wants to be shared, that just wants to join with everyone, that just wants to hug everybody and let everyone know, you know, the water is warm, jump in. You can trust the Son of God.
Thank you, Thomas, for that beautiful story about you and Nook. That's very inspiring, I'm sure, for everyone. Thank you so much. And I'd like to turn this over to questions now, but before we do that, I'd like to ask you, if you could only utter one word for the rest of your life, this is just kind of a fun thing to do, but if you could only utter one word for the rest of your life, Thomas, what would it be? And then after you answer this question, let's just go into questions and answers until the end of the hour. And so I'll pass the mic back to you. Thank you.
Great question. One word, one answer, trust. Trust, trust, and more trust. I trust. That's all we need. I trust. Thank you. So, yeah, love to hear, field your questions, guys. All up to you. I'll hand over the mic.
Hi, Thomas. This is Steve again. I don't know if you remember me. We met the first time you were at Pathways, and then we met again in San Francisco. But when you were talking, and now that, I think it's Heaven Song 1234 that asked you the question earlier about form, or indirectly asked you the question about form that you seem to address. But when I heard you talking about that that question or the answer, that was way back about 316, where she said, so she picked up more form, and I heard your answer, and you talked about Nick, and, you don't know a lot of people that would let a woman's ex-husband stay in the same house with her new husband stuff. But it seemed to me that reminded me of something that I read in the David Paul and Candace Doyle book about how, whether one person wants to or not, you end up having to let go of one relationship because there could be many, 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 many more lessons in. And I read it first in David Paul and Candace Doyle's book. I think it's called The Voice for Love now. It was called The Journey That Never Was when I first got the book. But how it might seem hard to let go of one relationship because, and at that time you did, because that relationship did seem to end in form. But at the same time, I guess when you were sharing, and I might be remembering wrong, that's why I'm asking the question, when you were sharing, I think it was at Pathways and I wasn't there, you had said when you talked about Nick that actually there weren't a lot of lessons that you, Thomas, and Nuke were learning together, but that Nuke seemed to learn a lot of lessons with her relationship with Nick. So that's kind of the question. It seemed like that relationship brought her a lot more lessons, and I think that was something that I heard you allude to, but I'm not sure if I'm right or not. So that's kind of the question. So here's the mic back. And I was going to ask you if you ever used that cup, but I can send you an instant message later. I don't have to do that now. So here's the mic. Thanks.
Thanks for the question. Yes, g'day, how are you, mate? Look, the thing is that what we realized with Nook and I was, yes, it's like Nick was presenting as a teacher that would help Nook to undo a whole bunch more areas of her ego. Whereas it's not that Nook and I no longer had lessons to learn with each other, but there were areas of where the ego was hiding within Nook that wouldn't be exposed with me. Do you understand what I'm saying? So she knew that those areas would come up for question with Nick, and all she wanted to do was wake up. That's all she wanted to do. So this relationship wasn't about, oh my God, you know, you're going to provide for me and look after me and, oh, I'll have a nice house and, oh, thank you very much. It was about, yes, here we go. This is terrific. Now, it isn't just that. It was underneath that, of course, they shared that same thing that we had, which was that deep commitment, that deep sense of knowing, just knowing that the security of the love was so deep that it would allow both parties to go to those places that they need to go to undo the ego, right? So that's what happened. Thank you for the question.
I just wanted to thank you very much, Thomas, for being here with us today and for sharing your wisdom and your experiences of connecting with Source. It's very valuable to all of us out here, and we really appreciate it. I hope that I get the chance to meet you someday. Please give Nook our love and greetings. And I will be back here next week with Robert Holden. He's the director of the Happiness Project and Success Intelligence. He's written several books, The Happiness Formula, several books. And also, Nook and Thomas, if you'd like to look at their website, and I will put that up there, or perhaps Dove will put it up there, and see where they will be appearing. Maybe they'll be in your part of the country soon, and or your part of the world soon. And if you would like to check out their schedule and perhaps meet up with them. And I'd like to leave you with this quote, and I will be sure to put their website up for you when I'm done speaking. And I'd like to leave you with this quote: life is not about waiting for the storms to pass, it's about learning how to dance in the rain. And if you'd like to have any final closing comments for us today, Thomas, I'll pass the mic back to you. Anything else you'd like to say?
Just want to say thank you, everyone. Thanks for joining me here. Linda, thank you for making this opportunity available for me to share. I truly, truly appreciate it. I look forward to joining all of you in whatever form. And I guess my closing remark would be simply this, that let's all remember that the only purpose for this body is to use it to communicate from Jesus, yeah? To not use this body lovelessly. It's only a communication vehicle, but let's use it in every instance to join and to mirror back to ourselves that we are indeed the light of the world. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much. And that is so lovely to leave us with that parting words of wisdom. I will see you all next week, and call to joy. Go ahead and take the mic. Thank you.
Hi. Thanks, Linda and Thomas. And I just had a real quick question. I never thought of it before, Thomas. It won't take very long. I know you guys spent quite a bit of time with Course in Miracles. I was wondering if you ever had a chance to look at or felt guided at all to look at, like, the Way of Mastery just offhand, or if you felt like there was any differences in the presentation in the Way of Mastery compared to the... I know if you really get into it, he does talk about trust, but not exactly in the same way. So that was the only question I had, and thanks for the answers before. And like I said, I'll try and send you an instant message just to ask you another question that I don't need to ask in the room. So thank you for both of your sharings. Here's the mic back.
Thanks for the question. Nope, we're pretty much course guys, folks. We've seen and looked at a lot of material before pre-course, and of course post-course. A lot of people have sent us a lot of material, but we just know that for us, A Course in Miracles works. It has worked. It's brought us this far, and that's the only thing we're into. And that's it. I mean, in the end, my other comment would be to say to everybody, hey, all roads lead to Rome, right? So whatever is fine. For Nook and I, it is purely A Course in Miracles. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Thomas. Thank you for your wonderful questions. And everyone have a lovely day and a beautiful holiday. And make every day a holiday of Thanksgiving. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Just so many people are always saying, we just listen to Tomas and Nook, and they're just making it so much easier for the light to be shared so beautifully. And I want to thank you also, Linda McNabb, for your willingness to have it here at ACM Gather. Every single one of the interviews has been really magnificent. I have gotten and received so much every time you invite someone to be interviewed right here. Thank you so much. I have recorded this. I'll send it to you. And we're about to turn.